Welcome to Keeping Up With Data. Keeping Up With Data is the podcast that keeps data enthusiasts up to speed with what is happening in the data world. We bring in the leading minds from the data industry to talk all things career, news, embarrassing stories, failures, and successes.
Well, we are here again with yet another episode of Keeping Up With Data podcast. We are blessed with the presence of
Andy Sawyer
and James Ross.
So we've got a lot to unpack today. We were very looking forward to having Andy in. I know it's been a while since we've been trying to get you on board. So I think the focus on this one, obviously there's a lot to go through, but we'll start kind of with your journey, how you got into tech, give the audience a bit of a background story as to your journey into where you are now.
Sure. And it's a bit of a windy road. I mean, going back to my school days, I had no idea what I wanted to do. So I was born in the UK. I did my A-levels. Do I want to go to uni? Do I want to get a job? I was probably a little bit too lazy and really didn't know where I wanted to go. Ended up working in a bar and then doing a hospitality qualification. And as part of that, I went to London and I worked in a hotel for a year. Worked around all different locations. Started off with a month in housekeeping, hated it. Gradually moved around the different areas and had a motorbike at the time and had an accident on the motorbike. And the doctor said, well, you need a job where you're sitting down for a while. And so the company that I was working for were good enough to put me into the finance department, put me in accounts, sat me down, and it was amazing. It was the best job I'd ever had. I didn't need to wear their uniform. I got to wear a suit. It was Monday to Friday. I didn't get a call in on a public holiday or a weekend. It was the best. And so I wanted to be an accountant. And fast forward, I moved to Australia in 2004. And I started working at a oil and gas company. And I was working in their finance team, reporting to the CFO. And He was really generous to me. He took me under his wing. He helped me get a, as he called it, a real degree. and then as part of that, he brought in someone that he knew to help build out a data warehouse. And at the time, he said, well, do you want to be a part of this? Do you want to see how this works? I was working in financial analysis. I was working with numbers. I'd built an Access database to track our cash balances, and it seemed interesting. So I said, sure. But what is a data warehouse? I didn't know. Started working with this guy, and it was a Microsoft SQL Server backend with then an Access front end to be able to interact with it and update it. And I learned from there. And I've gradually sort of moved around and sort of switched backwards and forwards between the data space and finance and accounting. Moved to Sydney back in 2014, working for a healthcare company in their finance systems. So systems, you know, still with that tech mindset, but clearly sort of over on the financial side. Yeah. But just kept on getting drawn back to data. So they needed to build a data warehouse. And so I put my hand up and I said, well, I've done that before. How hard can it be to do?
Yeah.
And did it again, moved to consulting. And I was leading a team of consultants for a small consulting company, going into a lot of different companies and looking at their tech stack and understanding what it is that they were trying to achieve. And what I was seeing over and over again was the processes were not where I thought they should be. I knew enough to know that if you look at software engineering and you look at the best practices there, they just seem to be so far ahead of what was happening in the data space that I needed to understand how to bring that to data. And so my current work, I'm working at Lendi Group, and I joined there very specifically because they have got a huge number of awesome software engineers. And what I wanted to do was embed myself in the practice of software and understand how you can bring that back to the data space. So I moved from senior leadership and strategy back into as much of a technical role as I thought that I could get, so that I could get hands-on with the tools and really understand what it is that works differently in software engineering and bring that to data.
Yeah. It's an interesting journey, like very interesting journey if you really look back into it with motorbike accident. So let's take it back to that, not the accident itself, we don't want to relive that, but in terms of if that never happened, you said you were in hospitality, that was where you wanted to go, you were driven for hospitality, did you assert in hospitality?
Yeah,
do you think if that accident didn't happen, would have stayed?
Yeah, I don't know. My mum was in hospitality, my grandma owned a pub. So quite possibly,
yeah.
You know, I look at some of my, the people that I used to go to, you know, studying with back then, and they're working in different hotels. They're in Dubai, they're in, you know, wherever in the world, but still working in hospitality. And yeah, I could well, hopefully wouldn't have gone back to housekeeping.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, potentially.
So when it all happens and you were told by the doctor you need to have a sit-down job, office job, you were blessed to get into the accounting style firm, how did it transpire from someone in hospitality with no idea of what a database even looked like or was to then having the opportunity to try and build a data warehouse? How did it go in your mind of like, right, how do I do this? Fake it till I make it, or what was the...
So the motorbike accident got me the desk job, and that got me accounts. And accounts showed me that, you know, hospitality is not 9 to 5. It's not Monday to Friday. It's weekends. It's,
it's 24 hours a day, essentially.
Yeah. And so this was much better than that for me. And so that was what moved me into the sort of the 9 to 5 office work. But it was really... and I'll call out to him, Colin Visaggio. He won't be listening to this. He's based in Perth. He's long since retired. But he was my CFO at the company that I was working at, and really took me under his wing and gave me every opportunity that he could. So I mean, you know, it's because of him that I've had these opportunities. Like, I wouldn't have had them otherwise.
Yeah.
So working in accounts, working through treasury, and financial analysis and working with numbers, but working with numbers that'll fit on my computer, that'll fit into an Access database that are easy to manage, to scaling that out to the business. And how do we see everything that's going on in the business and bring that through to a dashboard that the executive team can look at and understand how things are tracking. And so, I got the opportunity to work with someone that he'd worked with previously that he brought into the company, and he paired me up and got me that chance to really get into data at another level.
Yeah, so interesting. And then with data warehousing, so obviously it's become huge in the scene in the last 10 years, for example. So when was it exactly that opportunity arose? What era was that?
That would have been, I'm going to say 2006.
2006.
So it's a little while ago now.
And what do you think, I suppose, looking back now from your journey in the UK, obviously from my side, I did recruitment in Ireland. And when I first came over to Australia in 2019, I felt things were quite behind a little bit compared to where Ireland was in the advancement of machine learning, for example, and the business who had embedded that in. What do you think the journey has looked like from data warehousing 2006, 2008, when you were building it with the finance team? All the way through to
it's
now.
It's changed dramatically. So it was a Microsoft SQL Server on-prem, loading the data out of another Microsoft SQL Server that sat right next to it. And I look forward to where we are now, and the world has moved to cloud. We went through that sort of transition of calling the term big data. I think that these days what was big data is just the norm. But you know, we've got millions, billions of transactions flowing through a day now. We've got live streams, so we use Kafka for our microservices, event streaming, and all of that data needing to come through to a data warehouse. Look at tools like Snowflake and the ability to have unstructured data coming through to your data warehouse. We're so far away from where we were back in 2016, where it was all nice tables, copying to nice tables.
Yeah. Where are you guys at in Lendive, like from your journey in terms of, I see you're doing a good bit on the blogs around data mesh, data pipelines, modern data pipelines. How would you describe to the average user modern data pipelines compared to data pipelines in 2006?
I think that there's actually a step before that of explaining to people what a data pipeline is, full stop. You know, within our business, we're trying to move to more of a data-driven culture and really having the business embrace the data and take ownership for their data. And as part of that, you look at the data owners and the data stewards and the data custodians. But having an understanding of what these things are is important. So I describe us to the business as the plumbers of the data world.
So glad that you say that. Sorry to cut off, but generally the first time when I started learning about data pipelines, I literally picture those ones from Mario, like those green ones. And every time someone says data warehouse, I just think of like a big hanger. So I'm glad that you say we're the plumbers.
That's the one.
Plumbers is the data warehouse.
Exactly.
Yep, our job is to get the data from point A to point B, transforming it in the middle to make sure that the way that it comes out is the way that it's needed. And you know, it comes in from all these various sources and it comes out to the different destinations. And I don't know that I see it all coming through to a data warehouse and that's the end of the road. It comes out to a series of tables and each one of those is the end of a pipeline. Or it comes out to an API and that's the end of a pipeline. So the data engineers, they move data from point A to point B or from system A to system B. And the systems either, at the most basic level, they're either pushing the data in or they're having the data pulled out. And then at the destination point, you're either pushing the data in or they're pulling the data out.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think of a, you know, WebSocket is pushing data through. A REST API, we're pushing the data out. Something like Power BI, you've dropped the data in the table and Power BI is pulling it out of the database. But either way, it's we're that middle layer there of getting it from where it needs to be to from where it was to where it needs to be and transforming in the middle.
Yeah. It's definitely revolutionized with time for sure. And I know you went back to the UK in 2017, was it, to partake in a chief technology officer role or?
I actually set up my own business and it was part of the realization of the difference between software engineering and the data engineering or the data space. So I set up a company looking at software architecture and trying to plan out this is where we are, this is where we need to get to. So basically a web app. Working on that, so REST, React, Node, understanding how that software stack came together helped me understand that what I was doing here was so fundamentally different to what was going on in the data world, where we've got a data warehouse, we don't have dev or UAT, we've just got prod. Yeah. And if you want to make a change, there's a stored procedure and you open it up and you change it and you save it and you cross your fingers and you hope that it works. So I knew that I needed to bring this change that I'd seen in the software engineering space to data world.
Yeah, that boils into, I know I put a post up recently on LinkedIn around how to get into data engineering or advice in terms of like what tools to use. And I put up Python and Java, I think it was, as two top tools for programmers to, or anyone, for example, to get into data engineering. And you had added a few more. What would you say, like, for someone, for example, a data analyst? Because there's a lot of people really trying to break into data engineering now. What do you think are the main fundamentals for someone who has a bit of technical acumen, maybe a BA or a data analyst, or someone who understands tech databases but not at the advanced level of data engineering, for example?
Sure. So there is a vast amount of software out there, a huge number of tools, and you can become overwhelmed very quickly. And I've seen it time and time again on Reddit posts. How am I ever going to break into this area? There's thousands of tools. How do I know what to pick, what to learn? And I think the answer to that is very similar to when you look at, you know, Azure or AWS or Google. As long as you know one of them, those skills are transferable. So for me, I would say that you need to know how to interact with a database. You need some SQL skills. You need to know how to pull data into a database and out of a database. And by and large, the industry has sort of moved towards Python to be able to move that data around. But there are low-code or no-code tools such as Fivetran that let you do that fairly seamlessly. You need to know how to orchestrate the data, how to put it on a timer, how to send it every day. So tools like Airflow or Mage.ai, they allow you to do your scheduling. Don't try to overdo it and learn everything. Start with SQL, Python, and I can orchestrate my job. That should be enough to get you your interview and get you in. And from there, you look at, you know, building on that. So Terraform, infrastructure as code. I don't want to log into Snowflake to create a new user or to apply a permission grant. I want to do it in a code base where it's all under control, and that I can do put a PR into Git and have someone in the team approve it and then merge that and have it all just trigger in the background. Docker, learning Docker is awesome. It lets you take all of your stuff and put it in a little container that will work on your machine, will work in the cloud, will work somewhere else as well. You get rid of that, but it works on my machine response when something doesn't work for somebody else. But yeah, start with foundations. SQL, Python, and being able to orchestrate that.
We might do a course just to ourselves, James.
I was thinking about it, obviously. Data engineering, right? Like Sean said, it was interesting. Even like you look at a few years ago, data science, everyone wanted to be in that. Now it's data engineering. I was going to ask your opinion. I know we've spoken about this before around AI. Do you think businesses as a whole are getting too caught up in that as a new fad, like how data science was kind of, say, pre-COVID, like 2018, 2019? Because you look at it now and data science is slowly growing again, but it's nowhere near as in demand as probably what it was, because engineering's so in demand because you need good pipelines, you need good foundation to build off. Do you foresee the same thing kind of happening with AI at the moment? Because that's obviously the buzzwords, what everyone talks about.
It's a really good question. I don't know the answer to that. I read a post this morning on the train on the way in that someone who had been working for OpenAI for about a year had gone through a whole load of training of these models and came to the conclusion that it doesn't matter how you're building these models, it's all related to the data that goes in. So whether you're talking about Cloud or ChatGPT or name any LLM out there, they're only as good as the data that's in there.
Yeah.
And the data that's in there needs to be clean, it needs to be consistent, it needs to be of good quality. And so I think that we'll get to a point where we realize that, you know, these tools are awesome. They've got huge implications for the way that we work, the way that the world operates. But it comes back to making sure that data that's going in is clean and is good data. And that kind of circles around to good data governance and process, I think.
Interesting you say that, because obviously we know governance is obviously an area as well where everyone's trying to put a spotlight on at the moment. Do you see like the governance and engineering world, from your opinion, kind of coming together? Because I think like even a couple of years ago, again, governance is so siloed, people didn't really talk about it. It was like, here's one person doing the job type thing. But if it boils down to, you know, have like good quality, clean data going into whatever you're trying to get, do you think kind of governance should start to mold with engineering or general technical teams within like the IT world?
I think governance is as much a way of working and a thought process as it is a set of tools and technologies. The tools and technologies let you see what's going on and let you understand the data and get access to it and see, you know, that this has been identified as PII or this is SPI or this is level 1, 2, or 3. But it's the way of working, the approach, the controls that you have in place as a business that really helps drive good quality of data.
Do you think it should be now with kids, for example, having way more access to the internet, way more access to phones at 12 years of age, for example? They're diving deep into the internet at that age. Do you think it should boil back all the way into school from 10 plus years of age, where they're having a basic knowledge of some things can be fake, not everything you see on these screens are exactly as you think they are? Would it work then, or are kids' brains too non-advanced for understanding?
I think you've got to be careful not to scare them at that age. But certainly starting that education earlier, the reality is, you know, I'm in my 40s and this is now new stuff. So of course I wasn't trained on it when I was younger, it didn't exist.
Yeah.
But yes, now it exists. There's kids there that absolutely we should be warning them of the dangers, or warning them, you know, of the concerns that they should have and that they should be double checking things, or don't just rely on what you see, but be able to corroborate it with secondary sources.
Yeah.
But yeah, what age to do that at? I guess there's a balance there.
Yeah, I can always remember my dad when I was younger and I first got into the internet. It was like, Dad, have you seen this? Have you seen this? I forget exactly what he said now, but it was like, believe 20% of what you hear, 50% of what you read, and like nothing of what you see online or something like that. It was some form of stats. It was like, you've got to check because there's just so much stuff going on. But that kind of leads me into the Lendi piece. Obviously, businesses are looking to now AI advance. How can we integrate AI to capitalize on anything? Where's Lendi's journey start with AI, if that can be broadcasted,
sure.
Obviously?
So we've taken a human in the loop approach. There's a number of high profile cases out there where there haven't been humans in the loop and it's just run wild. And unfortunately, I can't remember the name of the car manufacturer, but they had a chatbot that was quite happy to sell a car for $1.
Exactly.
And recommended a different brand to a customer, you know, because it's not been implemented well. And so we've got a process of human in the loop, which basically means we can use AI to help us improve our product offering and increase our efficiency. But we make sure that we vet anything that's going to be going out. Ultimately, if you use ChatGPT or you used an LLM to generate something, you're responsible for what it is that it's putting out there. So that's the approach that we've taken. And I think that where we'll see the most benefit in the short term is the improvements in efficiencies that you get internally. It's not necessarily the externally facing tools that are available, or, you know, that companies are putting out there. And 100% that will work for some companies, but I think for us it's going to be, what can we do internally to increase our efficiency?
Andy, I would just begin to quickly circle back, if you don't mind. So I think you touched on a bit before when you talked about, you know, why you wanted to get back from the strategic and, you know, the full-fledged leadership into the hands-on. What was the real drive behind that? And like, what advice as well would you share with any other leaders that have been maybe thinking they've lost a bit of their technical touch?
Sure. Don't underestimate what you're actually capable of. If you've led teams, technical teams, you will have picked up on a lot of what they do, even if you haven't come through a technical route. So embrace that. Spend that time with the team to really understand what it is that they're doing, how they're doing it. If you don't feel comfortable in an area, try and find yourself an opportunity to give it a go. Because then when you do look to sort of officially move into more of a technical space, you feel far more comfortable in yourself and what it is that you're able to deliver.
Look, Andy, I think coming in today, it was great to have you on board. The journey was pretty crazy from a motorbike accident to where you are now. So much appreciate coming in. I suppose on that note, we'll finish and see jokes. What have you got for us? We sometimes get the trolling in.
Yeah, I'm particularly bad with jokes. So I've got a almost 2 year old now. So as a dad, my dad joke would be, where do dads get their jokes? From the database.
And on that note, that's a wrap.
Keeping Up With Data is the podcast that keeps data enthusiasts up to speed with what is happening in the data world. We bring in the leading minds from the data industry to talk all things career, news, embarrassing stories, failures, and successes.
So something really important for us here at Precision Sourcing is mental health. It's something we've been focused on a lot over the last year or so. And we're lucky enough to have partnered with the Black Dog Institute. And we're going to be doing a lot of events with them this year. A lot of our events, money will be going towards them. And they're out there aiming to create a mentally healthier world for everyone. So if you wish to support the cause, please donate via the link in the bio on this podcast. And you'll be seeing a lot more information about Black Dog over the next year.